Welcome to Dark Corners with David Allan Voiles. Dark Corners is brought to you by Gestalt Media, an independent publishing company dedicated to serving independent artists. Dark Corners is a horror podcast and may not be suitable for all listeners. Therefore, discretion is advised. Season 2 consists of episodes written and narrated by David Allan Voiles, based on a story suggested by the Halloween-themed musical work Witch Works, created by dark ambient musician Mombi Uhlman. The 13th episode concludes the season in October of 2020. Chapter 2, Moonbeam Mischief. Daniel frowned as he walked the front porch, his cell phone to his ear, looking out into the twilight at the newly planted corn. "So you're saying this is going to take a while?" Deirdre's voice showed her annoyance, but then she sighed and added, "But, to tell the truth, I'm just glad you're the one handling everything now. I've got enough on my plate. I just wish Daddy had left some sort of financial arrangements for his own funeral. Wasn't right to put the burden on us. Well, on you, I guess. Warren and I both appreciate you handling that, too. Things have been a bit tight for us lately." "It's not a big deal. It's not like I'm Daddy Warbucks or anything, but that's not a hardship for me right now. And I'll get paid back eventually." "Eventually," Deirdre huffed. "I really don't get a good feeling about this Rogers guy. I know Daddy's finances are bound to be a bit squirrely with him renting out most of our land, but it seems like we're getting the runaround from our own lawyer." "Maybe one of us should have gone to law school," Daniel joked. "A part of the problem, too, is that we're having to go against Pop's will, since he left everything to me. It'd go faster if I just took it and then gave you half of everything, but Roger says the taxes would be terrible for me if we do it that way." "I know. And I'm cool with that. There's just something else about him that seems shifty to me. Like he's not telling us everything." Daniel nodded his head, even though Deirdre couldn't see him. "But I guess we're stuck with him for now. Hate to change horses at this stage of the game. He knows the history of the farm and all the complicated contracts Pop's made through the years." "I suppose so. I just hate it for you. You got any idea how long you'll be staying?" That was indeed the question. Daniel sighed. "I really don't know what to expect. I'll need to go back to see to a few things next week, but then I'll come right back." He paused. "I'm beginning to think I might better plan for a leave of absence for the fall, too." "You can afford to be without an income that long?" Deirdre asked bluntly. "Didn't know those little colleges paid that well." Daniel laughed. "Oh, they don't, trust me. But I've really just got apartment rent and a car loan to worry about, so I'll be all right. I'd rather not be out of work, but I can make it through the holidays if I need to." "Well, that's good. Listen, I gotta go. I made some brownies to take out to Granny's, and I want to get them out there while they're still warm if I can, and before they lock the place up for the night." "Granny." Daniel gave a little snort through his nose. "Does she even know who you are?" "Oh, she knows a lot more than people give her credit for. I learned years ago that she's pretty crafty about how to play people." "I don't know. She always freaked me out. I hated going to see her. I mean, she was the only grandparent we had, and she was crazy as hell. Remember how she would call me Frank? And talk to people that weren't there?" "Yeah, I know. She scared me too as a kid. She was diagnosed with Alzheimer's at a really early age. But now I know she's just a lonely, confused old woman who needs a little love. So I try to do what I can." "It's really sweet of you, Dee." "Well, don't get used to it. If this lawyer keeps fooling around, I'm going to be hell on wheels." They both laughed and said goodbye with promises to talk again in the next few days. Daniel put his cell in his pocket and went back into the house to settle into his father's lazy boy with the 19th-century vampire novel Carmilla. He was still feeling pretty full from the meatloaf and potatoes he had prepared earlier, so it wasn't long before he was dozing. When he awakened, he was surprised at how dark it was. The living room was illuminated only by the lamp beside the recliner, and the rest of the house was dark. The sound of the cicadas was incredibly loud since he preferred a natural breeze through the open windows and screen door rather than the AC his father always ran. He stepped out onto the porch to appreciate the sound and the glowing lights of the fireflies. Lightning bugs, as he and Deidre called them. He recalled the fun they had had as children, catching them and putting the poor creatures in jars with holes punched in the lids, thinking that the bugs would actually enjoy living in these homemade showcases, only to find them dead in the morning. On a whim, Daniel walked down the drive and past the barn until he came to the path by a section of the cornfield that would take him through the pumpkin patch. The path that led ultimately to the toy factory. The fireflies created a spectacular light show over the field, but Daniel noticed a different type of flickering light within the woods. He debated whether to go back to the house and grab a flashlight. Oh, whatever's causing that might stop by the time I get it, and then I'll never know, he thought. The full moon made traveling the path quite easy, and within minutes he was past the pumpkin vines, which he noticed had started their first sprouts, and approached the edge of the woods. Hunting deer with lights at night was illegal, but Daniel knew that wouldn't stop some of the good old boys of Carteret County. The Thompson property bordered the Croatan National Forest, and hunters loved the area. They were far enough inland that the territory was not protected wetlands, and covering the terrain here by foot was fairly easy. Daniel felt compelled to see what was causing those flickering lights. He stepped lightly into the needles that carpeted the sandy soil of the pine forest toward where he thought he had last seen the lights, and hoped that he wouldn't have to leave the familiar path. The woods did make the atmosphere darker, but the moon was so bright, Daniel had no problem making his way even in the pine forest. A glimmer of a light caught his eye. As he quietly approached, he saw that there was more than one light. Several people, perhaps half a dozen, were carrying torches. Keeping himself far enough at a distance to remain inconspicuous, he followed them through the thick stand of loblolly pines until they came to a clearing he remembered from his youth. There was little undergrowth, so it was easy to position himself in the darkness and watch what the odd group was doing. When Daniel crept closely enough to be able to see them more clearly, he was amazed to find that it looked like he'd discovered a pack of overgrown trick-or-treaters, only in June and in the middle of the woods. They wore bizarre costumes and masks to resemble large animated toys, a wind-up ballerina, a toy soldier, two clowns, a teddy bear, and one figure in flowing robes with the mask of a black cat. The masks they wore looked as if they came from decades past, hard, plastic, grinning faces held in place by a simple elastic band. The flickering torches cast a light that distorted the images so that an illusion was created that made it seem to Daniel as if the expressions changed, grinning and frowning, often twitching or winking. They'd formed a circle by the time Daniel had positioned himself in a safe place to witness their odd behavior without being seen, with one figure, the black cat, positioned in the center. The long handles of their torches were sharpened on the ends, which allowed the members of this bizarre entourage to stab the torches into the ground so they could support themselves. As the group began a low chant in unison, they began to step sideways, turning in a counterclockwise circle, left foot over the right, then right foot behind the left, in a smooth, fluid fashion, always facing the leader in the center. They held their arms out to the side, too far apart to grasp hands, but stretching as if that had been their intent, all moving in rhythm with the chanting. As their voices rose in volume, the speed of their circling increased as well. The flickering of the torches on their faces and the eerie sound of the unintelligible chants made Daniel dizzy. He leaned his forehead against the rough bark of the pine that he was hiding behind and closed his eyes to get his bearing. When he opened his eyes, he found that he was now, somehow, in the center of the group. The masked faces were even more grotesque and disorienting as they spun around and around him. Faster and faster they went, one face melting into another. The ballerina became a hideous clown with sharp teeth that definitely had not been there before. That face then transformed into a snarling bear, no longer the comforting face that might comfort a child. This was no child's teddy bear. As if to confirm that thought, in the midst of the chanting, Daniel heard a baby's cries, and in the swirling confusion of images, he thought he indeed saw an infant. Bare, bloody, and bawling, in cruel, uncaring hands that hoisted it above all their heads amidst terrible laughter that mingled with the chants. Louder and louder, faster and faster, the images blurred together until suddenly, silence. Daniel knelt on all fours on the pine needle floor of the dark forest. He raised his head to find that no one else was there. There were no torches, no sign that there had ever been torches present, no burning scent that he had smelled just moments before, no holes in the soft earth to indicate where they had been thrust, no disturbed ground or needles to show where the celebrants had danced. He slowly stood and took a few lumbering steps around the clearing, staring in disbelief, desperately looking in vain for what he knew had just been there. Daniel turned and sat down heavily on the ground. He closed his eyes and forced himself to breathe through his nose as he tried to calm his rapid heartbeat and gather his senses. When he opened his eyes again, he saw through the stand of trees and blocking the stars in the clear night sky the silhouette of the tallest remaining wall of the Black Cat Toy Factory. He had not realized that he was so close to the ruins. A chill ran up his spine, which amazed him considering the fright that he had already endured. And then he saw through one of the broken window frames that had not held glass for many, many years, a flickering light. "Oh no," he whispered. "I thought they were gone." He sat still, fearing that the one light would become six, and that they would become a parade which would leave the factory to wind through the pines again and return to the clearing. But as he watched, the light behaved differently than the ones he had spied through the trees before. It looked like someone was shining a flashlight around the interior of the factory. On shaky feet, he stood and made his way through the woods and up the slight incline to the back of the factory. He wanted to peer inside before entering, see who or what was in there. He had to know. Maybe they had seen what he had seen. To get to the broken window, he had to go past a large portion of the wall which allowed no view of the interior. He walked as quietly as he could, wanting desperately not to give his presence away before he intended. Within a minute or two, he had rounded the back corner of the factory and arrived at a portion of the burned building that had collapsed in the fire that had destroyed much of the factory so many years before. He stepped carefully around the debris, having to go very slowly, as he could only see a path with the moonlight that filtered through the broken ceiling. The factory was quiet except for his own footsteps. He no longer saw a light, but he could make out the large, open area of the main floor. Coming from the rear of the building, he could see the moonlit terrain outside the factory through what used to be the front entrance that was now directly in front of him. The doors lay just as he had seen them 2 weeks before when he had ironically toasted the factory. He stood under what had been the main office that had once stood between two other, smaller offices on the mezzanine floor. Supported by an extensive ironworks, the entire mezzanine had survived the fire intact. So much moonlight shone through the tall, broken windows on the sides of the factory that Daniel felt he could walk through to the front entrance safely, except for whoever had been shining the flashlight.
Hello?
A rustling in the bricks, sticks, and branches on the factory floor to his right made every muscle constrict. Hello? A female voice called out, echoing his own call. Who's there? He said, trying to sound authoritative and hoping his voice didn't break. My name's Daniel Thompson. My family owns the farm nearby. A pause. And then, Laura. Laura Frazier. Another pause, and then the flashlight flicked on. She held it under her chin so that it looked as if she were about to tell a ghost story around a campfire. I don't mean to be trespassing. I'd heard stories about this old factory and wanted to investigate. I suppose I should have stopped and asked first, but then, well, better sometimes to ask forgiveness than permission, right? Daniel worked his way to the light, noting that she was also backing slowly toward the entrance, ready to run if necessary. To put her at ease, he said, It's okay. I'm not really the owner anyway, just a neighbor, like I said. I saw the light and thought I'd better check it out. Without a flashlight? Long story. Laura shined her light on his path toward her, trying to keep it out of his eyes, but also wanting to assess if his appearance matched his words. Even in the dim lighting, Daniel could see that the woman was very attractive, and more importantly, that she was pointing a Glock 43 straight at him. Whoa, Daniel said, stopping in his tracks. Please, I've gone through enough shit for one night. After assessing for another moment whether Daniel was a threat or not, Laura pointed the gun at the ground. Sorry, but I've learned that a woman out on her own in situations like this needs to be able to take care of herself. Yeah, I get it. But, like, what brings you out here by yourself in the first place? Laura eyed Daniel closely and then said, I'm kind of a nut about the paranormal. I like checking out haunted places like this. Haunted? Daniel asked. Yeah. You hadn't heard stories? Well, there have definitely been a lot of weird things that have happened up here. In fact, my grandfather used to work in the factory, and my mother's told me some strange stuff about his time there. But I don't know that I've heard stories of ghosts, exactly. And Daniel thought about what he had just experienced. So, have you, seen anything up here tonight? No, I actually just got here. What I had heard was... The sound of doors opening above them made her stop. Laura flipped her flashlight up to the mezzanine and shot the beam along the open rooms until she found the set of large wooden double doors standing open. Did you hear that? She whispered. Yeah. Were those open before? She asked. Don't know. They weren't when I was here a couple of weeks ago. Before she could ask him why he'd been there then, the distinct sound of another door opening echoed in the darkness, and footsteps rang out from the metal walkway. Laura shined her light in the direction of the steps, but no one was there. The footsteps seemed to be getting closer, and then the unmistakable sound of someone descending the iron steps on the right side of the factory indicated that something was approaching them. Laura had been following the sound with the flashlight and pointing the Glock where the light shone, although the beam illuminated only empty steps and the walkway and the walls behind them. When the sound of the footsteps stopped, she pointed both objects at the foot of the steps, the shaking beam betraying her fear. After a moment of silence, the footsteps resumed, ascending the steps, with the volume decreasing as whatever made the sound walked away from them. As Daniel and Laura stared with mouths hanging open, the door to the office on the right closed. And then, all hell broke loose. The sound of a factory running at full capacity at an ear-splitting volume burst forth. The whirring, humming, and clacking of dozens of invisible sewing machines, power saws, and lathes. And above it all, the cry of a child. That concludes this episode of Dark Corners with David Allan Boyles. Music for Dark Corners was written and performed by Mombi Yuleman and can be purchased at mombiyuleman.bandcamp.com. For my latest projects, you can always find information at my official website, davidallanboyles.com. And I invite all of you to join our Dark Corners Facebook group, where you can find background information on posted stories, previews of upcoming stories, and all kinds of other dark content. Hope we meet again soon in the Dark Corners.